Ladies and gentlemen, in just a few moments, we start our daily broadcast.
Who listens to radio?
Hi, I'm Dave Denton. I'm a radio guy, and even went by that name on the air in Missouri. This is Radio Guy Reflections. Radio Guy Reflections is brought to you by daysvoiceworks.com, where you can listen to the latest episodes of podcasts like the 3W News, the weird, the wacky, and wild stories you might have missed. Turnbuckle Trash is all about professional wrestling. And, of course, this podcast you're listening to right now, Radio Guy Reflections. And lots more. It's all at daysvoiceworks.com. You spell works, W-O-R-X, and put Dave's voice to work for you. Some of our past guests have been the president of the Nashville Songwriters Association, Bart Herbison, also Scott Girard, the play-by-play voice of the Utah State University sports teams, and he's also a successful sports talk show host in Salt Lake City. In our last show, we had Jason Williams, a talk show host in Logan, Utah, where we talked about how talk radio fits in with today's political situation. And today we are joined by Leslie Lotto, who has worked in radio and TV news, music, and the film industry. And today she is the president and lead anchor for a remote news service, a company that is supplying local news voices for radio stations all around the country, along with some other products. And we'll find out more about that for today's radio. We find out more about those things and more as we get ready to talk to Leslie Lotto. Leslie, thanks for being with us today on Radio Guy Reflections.
Thanks, Dave.
This is going to be fun.
Totally. I'm excited.
Yeah. We do this because we talk to radio people that have been in radio. We've talked to people that are currently in radio. We've had all kinds of different guests in different industries inside of the radio industry, and some of those that have moved on to other things like politics, believe it or not. First off, let's talk about you and how your journey began, where you were born and raised, and then how you started getting into the radio bug.
Where I was born and raised, geez. Well, I grew up in Los Angeles area, outside of Los Angeles, in the town of the Valley.
Oh, really?
Not really a town, the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, okay.
So I'm an absolute Valley girl. Let's see, I wanted to be a writer ever since I was about 10, 11, 12 years old. And I worked on the high school newspaper in 12th grade, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And I just was like hooked. And so then after that, when I went to college, I worked on the school newspaper there and I didn't like it as much.
Right.
And so then I started to explore other pieces of journalism. I did PR for a minute. I didn't like that. And then I took TV and radio broadcasting journalism classes, and I just fell madly in love with it.
Yeah.
And I think it also had to do with my teachers. So that was basically the beginning of everything for me. I worked at the college radio station at Cal State Long Beach. I then went on to just work at little tiny radio stations, as we do over the years. Unfortunately, jumping around small market radio wasn't very easy back then because there was no internet.
Right.
So, you know, I don't know if you remember those publications. One was Gavin Report.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other was, I think it was called Radio and Records or something like that. And they had the Help Wanteds in the back.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then you're mailing your resume and your tape and all of that out. So it was a long road. I ended up moving to Northern California for a job. I got laid off pretty quick.
Oh.
Made the mistake of getting involved with one of the DJs.
Oh, okay. That'd do it.
Maybe. We're still friends to this day,
oh,
actually.
Great.
And then I became a talent agent. I worked in radio as long as I could. And then I was looking for work, and there was a music talent agent looking for an assistant, and that sounded pretty interesting to me.
Right.
So I did that for a bit, and then I started my own talent agency, and I did that for 10 years. But then 9/11 happened, and I really decided I needed to be back in journalism. So I went all the way back to entry level after 15 years of not being in radio, and I ended up at KFI.
Wow.
So that's the pretty long short of it.
At KFI, after 15 years being out, that's pretty cool, though.
I got hired as a writer, and I think I was making like $12 an hour. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you know, I was in my 40s and had kids, and it probably wasn't the wisest decision, but I worked weekends while I still continued to be a talent agent for a while.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun. I liked it.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell a little story about a friend of mine and KFI, because I was living in a little town called Rexburg, Idaho, working there. And I was...
Oh, I know Rexburg.
Yeah, Rexburg. It's windy and cold in Rexburg all the time. But my friend Dennis and I, he was my roommate. We were up really late one night, and we were taking our AM radio just trying to see what stations we could come in with. And we were picking up KFI when they were still doing music. And they were doing a phone-in contest. And my friend Dennis called, and he won in Los Angeles from Rexburg, Idaho. And I wish I had a tape of that DJ who was doing that overnight show at the time. He was just flabbergasted. And I don't think he believed that we were calling in from Rexburg, but yeah, we could barely get it because that's one of those powerhouse stations. So
overnight. Yeah.
With KFI, then we were talking earlier and you said you moved to Missoula, Montana, which is closer to where I'm at because it's in the Intermountain West. And how did that that move come about?
So I was at KFI for 2 years, and it was very clear that I was not going to move into an anchor position or even a reporter position. I made it very clear early on that I was interested. I had some gals that were working there. One of them is still there. The other is over at KNX now. And they were coaching me and my voice and helping me to sound like, you know, a major market talent.
Uh-huh.
But the news director who's still there wasn't having it. And so I started looking elsewhere outside of Los Angeles for work. Mm-hmm. And I saw this job on All Access, which we all know well. And it said news director for Rocky Mountain West group of stations that are not yet on the air, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I applied, and the GM brought my husband and I both out there, which I thought was a very classy move. He flew my husband too, which generally that never happens.
Right.
And he was very brilliant at sort of like coaxing me over. He drove us around and showed us like all the highlights in the area. And, you know, drove us through the college. It's a big university town. University of Montana is there.
Uh-huh.
And we just were like flabbergasted at the beauty because, you know, we're living in San Fernando Valley and it's overcrowded and lots of traffic. And we happened to be there in springtime. It was Memorial Day weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just outrageous, just gorgeous. And, so we also took a trip out to Glacier National Park, and that was outrageous. And then it was just about deciding, like, do we want to leave Los Angeles? I had small kids at the time, and we knew we didn't really want to bring them up there.
Right.
So my husband also had just gotten a job offer at a sister station to KFI. He's not even in the business. But he is a sports fanatic, and he was offered a sales job at the sports station. I think it was called Extra.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was like his dream job. And so we really needed to decide, like, are we going to bail or are we going to stay? And I was like, it's your decision. I don't, you know, you decide, that's your dream job. I've had my dream jobs. I'm willing to stay, but you know, this might be a good move for the family. And we ultimately decided that it was.
Oh, good. It's a beautiful, beautiful country in Montana. Oh, it's just stunning. And you're not very far from Yellowstone Park and, like you said, Glacier. And but then again, there's Butte, Montana, and it's not the most beautiful place in the world. Butte is, well,
it, yeah, well,
it's spelled,
it's got history.
Yeah,
it's
it
got
does.
The Berkeley Pit.
Yeah. You're driving along the interstate there, and then there's, it's spelled butt, and that, you know, it, I had a job offer there once, and I almost took it. But so I've been to Butte a couple of times. I make fun of you, but it's okay. Let's move on now. In the career, when you were doing news, was there any particular news story that either touched your heart or just is just very memorable for you to say, you know what, this is why I got into the business of news?
That's a great question. I mean, there are just too many. I think 9/11 was an absolute game changer. I also remember one morning driving to KFI and I was listening to George Norrie.
Ooh.
Who, you know, that was a spooky show anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But they had just caught Saddam Hussein.
Wow.
And I was like, I had the chills driving in. It was super early in the morning. It was dark. I'm listening to Nori and he's talking about black holes in the desert. And I was just like, wow, this is really surreal, all of it. That story, you know, obviously when Osama bin Laden was murdered, that was also quite, you know, quite a eye-opening, shall we say.
Right.
Any war story, politics just excites me and also makes my blood boil. And then the stories that are really tough, like I've become so detached to so much of life now from doing news for such a long time, but the stories about children or animal neglect, things like that, those affect me.
Right. And I can understand that. We had a guest named Art Rascone, and Art Rascone, I actually gave him his very first job in radio late 70s, early 80s. Anyway, he went on to work in Los Angeles, and he was an award-winning Hispanic reporter there. Then he moved on to CBS News, and he just recently retired as an anchor in Houston, Texas. And he was telling me a great story about the Oklahoma City bombing. He covered that for CBS and how he'd been there for a couple of days doing reports. And he saw a little boy right in front of the bombing site laying down a flower at the site. And then he said, it touched me when he was telling it, that he went up to the child to see if he could do a story and said, did you know somebody there? And the little boy said, no, but all those kids.
Mm.
I just, when he said all those kids, it broke my heart from him just telling it. And it is hard sometimes when you have to do that story that is so tough to do. And animal neglect, things with children, but as a professional, you know you have to do it. It's hard for everyone in this business.
Mm-hmm. Mm. So yeah, so challenging. And the last, you know, not to get too deep into the weeds in politics, but I only do local news personally. I only have one station. I have 21 anchors, and they do all sorts of stuff. But for me personally, I'm just doing local news. And the last 2 years, but the four before that, and even maybe the year before that, there was so much head spinning news going on constantly every day, just like momentous things that were constantly being tossed at us.
Mm-hmm.
as national news reporters. I used to work at Fox News, so I did a lot of national news. It became exhausting. Mm-hmm. And so just doing local news that is very specific to a small town, like the news I do is for a town of like 2,000 people,
wow.
then it becomes less challenging because, you know, some of these sleepy towns, not a lot happens. So mm-hmm. it's more about like community news, like here's what's happening this weekend, or, you know, Thanksgiving dinners are being provided at blah, 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 or what, you know, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it can be heart-wrenching. It can be challenging. It can be infuriating. But obviously, we don't ever put our opinion
right.
in ever. But personally, it can definitely take a toll.
Well, you know, when you say that you don't want to put your opinion in there, and I totally agree with that, but when I'm reading news stories from national services and they put an opinion, just one little line that is not based in fact, it's based in opinion, like somebody shouldn't have said that. And then when you're talking about the social media aspect of what's going on in politics right now, I find more and more news writers slipping in opinions where they shouldn't be, and headline writers. That's the one that just kills me. Mm. The headline writers.
That happens.
Yeah, it just gets thrown in there, and then the story is done well, but the headline makes it sound completely different. So how did you see, as over the years, the advent of social media coming in, and how you approached doing your own news stories, even locally with a small station?
Can you expand?
Well, social media, I had this conversation last week with Jason, the talk show host, and we were talking politics and how the political structure has changed because of social media. President Trump used Twitter all the time. Sometimes people would say, way too much. And then you had other politicians, parties, and more using social media to get their point across instead of necessarily using network news, local news, newspapers, and that. Did you find any difference in the way you approached your local news coverage based on social media?
No, because the only thing is that I think it's more helpful to me because I can now follow a sheriff's department. I can follow a DA. I can go on Twitter and follow Cal Fire. You know, I can get more information from that's factual from the source.
Uh-huh.
I don't look at what people say about news stories. I don't care what they think.
Right.
It's about what the actual facts are and then turning that into a story that humans can consume by the way that it's written.
And that's a great answer because I had almost forgotten that social media can be a great source for news coverage. But yeah, that's just me being me, I guess. you know, when you do these stories in a smaller community, you are doing things, you know, almost public service type news, covering a fundraiser for a family that might have had a fire and lost everything. That to me is what local radio should be more about, is helping that community and not necessarily, you know, giving away time, but still helping people when they need it. And that's how radio actually began with the FCC and all their issues and reports and all that. How do you cover the local news for the town that you do the news for?
Thankfully, there's some still great newspaper sites out there. I also have relationships now. I've been in this market the first market that I ever did news for this company. I started my company 15 years ago.
Uh-huh.
As a matter of fact, just hearkening back to the beginning of this discussion, this former boyfriend of mine that I met in radio,
uh-huh.
I went to him first and said, hey, I'm thinking about starting this company. What are your thoughts? And he was my first client.
Oh, wow.
He thought it was brilliant. And I still have that client in a different market, but I have the first market with a totally different company, if that makes sense.
Right.
So I started doing news in this Northern California town for this one company. And then they added my company in Washington, but they got rid of the California market. And then another company in that California market picked my company up. So I've been doing news there for almost 15 years now in that same market. So after all of those years, you start to know all the players. And like one of the gals started her own local news site. So I depend on her. Sometimes I'll send her a Facebook note because we're friends on Facebook.
Right.
Or I'll, you know, ask her about a local story and what she knows because she lives there.
Right.
So, you know, it's like being actually a reporter in a town. You're just not there. So, you know, it's rare. I think I've had one time where somebody randomly recognized my voice and they happened to be visiting Montana and lived in one of my markets.
Wow.
And so they then figured out, wait, you live here. How are you doing news in Napa?
Reflection.
It's the world of professional wrestling. Hi, I'm Dave Dutton. I'm one of those lifelong fans. Christopher Evans joins me and Zane Peterson as we talk about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling from a little bit different perspective than a lot of the podcasts out there.
The following contest is scheduled for one fall.
We know what we like, and sometimes we talk about things we don't like.
You stupid idiots!
You might even find a chance to laugh at some of the things we do.
Who are you calling Rudy Tootie Booty?
It's Turnbuckle Trash. It's available on many of these same podcast channels. Join us. Turnbuckle Trash are also on Facebook and TurnbuckleTrash.net.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Once again, the big hand is on the four, the little hand is on the two, and it's time for the 6 o'clock report.
Hello, everyone. This is your Action News reporter with all the news that is news across the nation on the scene at the supermarket. There seems to have been some disturbance here. Pardon me, sir. Did you see what happened?
London, Madrid, Bangkok, Moscow, Cincinnati, from the four corners of the world, from the news capitals at home and abroad, the day's headlines brought into focus, the issues and events that shape our time. WKRP, Information Beacon of the Ohio Valley, presents Les Nessman and the news.
The parking area now, I guess it's looking for a place to land. No, something just came out of the back of the helicopter. It's a dark object, perhaps a skydiver, plummeting to the earth from only 2,000 feet into the air. Seconds, and a third. There's no parachutes yet.
Skydivers. I can't tell just yet what they are, but... Oh, my God, they're talking! Oh, Johnny, can you get this? Oh, they're crashing to the earth right in front of my eyes! One just went through the windshield of a parked car! Johnny, this is terrible.
The car is running around pushing each other? Oh, my goodness! Oh, the humanity!
We are here on the beach where a giant shark has just eaten a girl swimmer. Well, Mr. Jaws, how was it?
In labor news, longshoremen walked off the piers today. Rescue operations are continuing around.
Five-time winner of the Buckeye News Hawk Award. Now here's Les Nessman and the news.
Good morning. This is Les Nessman reporting. In the top story of the day, General Wallace Nassami, head of the emerging nation of Nibya, denied his new government was a dictatorship and promised free elections as soon as each citizen of the small country learned to play a musical instrument. Nassami said this was part of a new cultural program. Turning to sports... Winner of this week's Gulf Coast Golf Classic was Chai Chai Rodriguez. Chai Chai finished with a 9 under par score.
Chichi Rodriguez.
This is Radio Guy Reflections.
Too many people in this business who think that they're, I guess it's a podcast, their stuff doesn't stink. You know, it's just like, hey, look, we're all just enjoying the game. We're all just having a good time. Sports are supposed to be fun. Don't take yourself too seriously. Let's go have a good time and really paint a great picture for the fans out there.
I wanted to be me. I didn't want to put on a show. I wanted to, obviously, a show, but I didn't want to be fake on the air. What you get is what you get.
You know, that would be a fascinating career. I want to witness history in a way and see it and tell the compelling stories of it.
When did you find out he is autistic?
When you get that diagnosis, it's not necessarily a shock to you, but it's validating how you've been feeling.
I can't imagine what the future of talk radio could have been or would have been had Rush not come along when he did.
This is Radio Guy Reflections. Well, let's talk about your company, Remote News Service. I want to know what went off. What was that bell ringing moment you said, this might work, that you're providing voices that aren't necessarily in the market to radio stations doing news for them, but it is not national news like ABC or maybe people at Fox News and their network, but it is local news. What was that difference maker, that bell ringing moment for you?
Well, so the long and short of it is when I took the job in Montana, it didn't last very long, unfortunately.
Uh-huh.
So after about 6-7 months, it became very clear that the company that put up these brand new, very like state of the art studios and everything, that they ran out of money.
Ooh.
And so they sold to a company that did not like, I was working in Air America station. That was my station. And they were a Mormon company and they did not agree with the politics of, you know, liberal news.
Mm-hmm.
So they turned my station into Jack FM. So I lost my job. And I was without work for a while, so I started podcasting. And then somebody emailed me, another radio station owner in Missoula, and said, hey, I heard about this company that's doing news online. Maybe you should apply with them. And I was like, all right. So I checked it out, and I was, you know, in contact with them. And my husband said to me, you know, you were a talent agent for 10 years. You owned your own company. You can do this
right.
Exact thing. Why would you go work for someone else? And I was like, because I don't want to own another company. But I ultimately agreed with him and was like, all right, I'll just give it a shot. So that's the impetus of the company. I literally put up $1,000 that I didn't have to put, you know, I was unemployed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we scrounged up some money. We might have even put it on a credit card. I don't even remember. And we built a website, and that was that. And then that former boyfriend hired me, and the rest is history, really.
So, Leslie, your company, it's grown over the years, and how many people and talent wise do you employ now or represent?
So what, it's funny because it has sort of come into that idea that this is a talent agency or this is a headhunter or, you know, an employment agency of sorts. But how it really started was for me to just be doing news because I love doing news so much on the radio that I was just going to try to get some clients in Montana.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't get any in Montana for a while. It took me a while. And after, gosh, it must have been a few years. The woman who sent me that email actually hired me. Mm-hmm. And I ended up doing news for them for about 5 years in Missoula, but from my house. And then it became clear that I needed help. So I hired this one woman who had worked for KFI as well. Mm-hmm. And I had heard her on the air doing traffic, not news. And I knew her voice, and I heard many great things about her. And so we talked, and she had moved away from Los Angeles too. She was now in either Georgia or South Carolina. I can't recall, but somewhere in the South. And so I hired her. And so basically she was helping me just do like afternoons for the stations that I was doing all day so that I could have a break. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up hiring another guy. And then the recession hit in 2008, if you recall. Mm-hmm. And I had to let go of one of them, and I opted to keep the first hire that I had. And she still works for me to this day. Mm-hmm. We did have a hiatus there because she took a major market gig in Seattle for a couple of years. And then as that happens, you know, our dream jobs sometimes fizzle away. And as soon as I read that morning show she was on had ended, I was in touch with her again and coaxed her back.
Oh, good.
So beyond that, I've hired over the years, you know, I for a long time, I had about 10 anchors.
Uh-huh.
And I would say probably 3 or 4 years I was with the same anchors, or I'd lose one, hire one, lose two, hire three. You know, it was always like right around that 8 to 12 anchors. And over the last few years, it's grown exponentially. So I'll have like, you know, one person who does one station and that's all they do. And they might be working for another company like mine, or they may have a full-time job and they want to just make a little bit of extra money. And so right now I have about 21 anchors working with me. I don't say for me because we're a team.
Right. Let me ask you a question and go back a couple of years.
Yeah.
About the pandemic. Because when that hit, there was all these people started working from home. Did mm-hmm. you, with your news service, find it a little bit easier to convince the powers that be at other radio stations that this, having someone not necessarily local but doing their local news, would work for them and cut the cost for a radio station, let's say in Missoula, Montana? Was it difficult, or did you find the pandemic actually helped your business?
It did not help my business.
Okay.
At all.
All right.
What happened was, it's funny that you asked that, because like just about a year before, so in 2019, the end of 2018-19, I entered this business program. And it was like a business accelerator. And so for people who had owned their businesses for a certain amount of time, entrepreneurs, it was to help you come up with growth strategies. And one of the things that I was mulling was changing the name of my company, because I thought it was boring. At the beginning, I thought remote news service made sense, because back then, living in a remote area, you know, of the country, it made sense. But then after, say, 10 years, I was like, you know, I don't really like this name. I want to come up with something snappy. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to think of names. And then I just kind of, you know, got distracted with other things, as we do. And then the pandemic hit and everybody was remote. And I was like, wow, you know, this is smart that I didn't change the name of my company. Mm-hmm. But that being said, I lost one client. One client freaked out right away and said, I just lost a whole bunch of money. I can't afford you anymore. And then I went to every other client and just checked in with them. And some I lowered the fee for, and others stayed the same. And I didn't lose much money, but I also didn't gain much. Hmm. And then the following year, 2021, things really started to explode. Like, that's when I think people started to realize we can hire people that are out of market, or we can have our people work from home. You know, people have been voice tracking shows for well over 20 years from out of market.
Right.
So, but it didn't translate to news. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that I think a lot of stations, especially smaller ones, really do need slash want someone in market because they want them to go to those community meetings, the council meetings, the board of supervisors meetings, things like that, that we can't do. But we can, you know, we can stream and record and still get that sound, but we may not be able to walk up to someone with a microphone and stick it in their face and ask them questions.
And that is so time consuming. I remember, I was in Paris, Tennessee, doing news, and I'd get up in the morning at 4 o'clock, go to the radio station, work, doing news on two different stations until like 8:30 or 9. Then I have to go to the police department. Then I took a little break, and then I would come back and start making telephone calls or visiting, doing interviews. Then I had to do the afternoon news on the AM station. Then they wanted me going to the city council, the school board, and I would find myself 75, 80 hours a week just to produce a newscast. And, man, people that can do that and enjoy that, my hat's off to them because I was tired after a couple of months of doing that.
It's also boring.
Yes.
I mean, I hate to say, but it's very boring to sit in a meeting because it's not always exciting information. It's like, you know, let's read over the minutes from last week and, you know, there's no public comment or any of that. Then it's like, okay, this outdoor seating ordinance, you know, I was just writing about that recently. And, you know, even the story in and of itself being aired on the radio can be boring, and that's where creative writing comes in, right?
Right, very much so. So you find yourself at times when you're doing a local newscast thinking about how a outdoor seating ordinance, how it's going to affect someone in their everyday life, and that's the tough part about writing and making it interesting because people are saying there's actually an ordinance about seating outside. You know, that would be my first thing when I'd heard that was, how does this affect me?
Because maybe your favorite restaurant won't be able to have outdoor seating anymore. And you like going there and sitting outside with your partner and it's fun and lively and enjoyable.
Right.
Especially if you're in California where it's warm and not like you and I where we're in New York and Utah where it's freezing.
See, that's what I said. You know, how does it affect me? And that's the way that I've always approached my writing, especially on something like that. And even when I was doing programming for music radio, I wanted everyone to think about how does it affect that listener. And I think that's a unique thing that local news can really do. So your company, you have, like you said, 21 teammates. And how many radio stations now do you supply services for, if you can say?
You know, I would say the last I looked was like around 80.
Woo, that's a lot.
But I've also gained a couple more this week. Uh-huh. And so I count when I say 80, that might mean I have 30 clients and some have 5 stations, some have 2, some right. have 10, you know. So I have 30 clients at the moment.
Okay. 30 clients. That's hard to, well, it's not hard, but putting it all together and keeping everyone on the same page, that's where you come in, correct?
Say that again?
When you have 30 clients, then you have all this talent that's working with you, you have to kind of coordinate to make sure things are sitting to the right person. The right talent goes to the right radio station, and how do you keep up with all these different radio stations and then all the different talent? That's got to be a little time consuming at times.
Well, what happens is the station that comes to me over the years, I've sort of streamlined a lot of this. And that business program I told you about was helpful with it.
Uh-huh.
I have a form. And so a new client will fill out the form and they will tell me if they would like a female or male sounding voice. And so then what I'll do is I know generally that people are available at certain times, or they've told me they're looking for more clients or something like this.
Right.
Or they've told me they don't want any more clients. Sometimes I do coax people into taking clients. It just happened last month. But so I'll send demos and I'll say, these are the folks that are available. And I always leave it up to the station. Just like if you were answering an ad, you know, and then they like your voice, they're going to pick you. So it's really the same process. It's just I'm more like the conduit. And then at that point, when they make that decision and we just agree on a start date and pricing and things like that, I go back to the anchor and I say, I have this potential client. Here's when the news would be due. Here's how much it pays. Are you interested? Mm-hmm. And then they say yay or nay. And then I basically hand it off to, I have someone who's like my network liaison. She's our senior anchor. And she's the first hire I mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. And so she basically takes over after I've negotiated the whole deal. I do the contract and then she does the footwork as far as getting with the station, all the particulars, delivery time, intro, tag, you know, all that stuff, resources. And then she does all the onboarding of the client and of the anchor and makes that introduction between the client and the anchor. Mm-hmm.
So I'm just looking at your website for remotenewsservice.com, and it also mentions that you have other services like the podcasting and more. What other services that you can talk about do you offer with remotenewsservice.com?
Well, last 2 years, we started offering podcasting coaching. So I personally have done a bunch of podcasting. And so I will offer to, like, if somebody is like, I want to start a podcast, but I know nothing about it. So I can walk them all the way through from equipment buying to platform and coaching their voice and their writing and their framing of the podcast, naming the podcast, like really helping them hone in on exactly what their message is. Mm-hmm. And I've done that for a few, and that was very fun. It's sort of not something that we're dabbling in at the moment because we haven't had really a lot of asking.
Right.
We also do coaching as far as news writing, because sometimes you'll get some folks at a radio station that maybe are doing news, but have never done it before, but they've been on the air before and they sound great, but their writing isn't quite news writing.
Right.
Or they're ripping and reading from a newspaper. And as you and I both know, you can't do that.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So
I guess I could say that there's a radio station near me that their news is basically written for newspaper, even though they're doing it locally, because they hired nothing but newspaper writers, not necessarily writers for radio. And there's a different style between the two, don't you think?
Yeah, they could be using AP, because what AP basically does is they, and for those who don't know Associated Press, they might write a long newspaper or print story and then just kind of cut out the four middle paragraphs. And call it a broadcast story.
Right.
So I'm not going to say that they're, you know, doing anything wrong, but they might be ripping and reading right out of a paper, which is illegal. It's called plagiarism.
That's true.
Yeah.
So let's go on with your service. And what do you see the future for remote news service as what's going on within the next, say, 2 to 3 months? And what do you see for the foreseeable future, the next few years in your business?
Well, I'm still, you know, onboarding a new client right now. I'm talking to, say, three others about starting in the next, you know, month or so, or maybe next year. The main difference is when I started this company, it was with the idea that it would just be small market. Mm-hmm. And now I have some stations in New York City and Chicago.
Wow.
So it's gone from, you know, micro to medium market all the way up to major market. So it's really changed drastically over the years. So I can't even imagine what might be to come. But who knows what the future will bring. I'm just plugging along, Dave.
And, you know, as we do this, I want everyone to know that I've recently joined your team. And, you know,
yes.
I don't have a job yet, but I'm excited. When I found out about your service on the Small Market Network or the Small Market page on Facebook, I said, you know, that's something that might be right up my alley since I basically am retired now, just doing a little voice work here and there. And that's when I contacted you. And I'm really excited about the possibility and working with you. It's been a lot of fun. And it's just been just a couple of weeks. But immediately when I found about your services, man, this will make a great podcast on Radio Guy Reflections. And I really do appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, let's keep together and we'll talk more about your service, and we'll get some more maybe down the line and find out more. And as you grow and grow and get more and more stations involved, and I really do appreciate you being with us today on the podcast called Radio Guy Reflections, and then also invite you to share it on social media. We're always trying to grow our audience just like everything else. And that's one thing I wanted to ask you, one final question. Social media in radio, how important do you see it being for radio now?
And God, that's a good one. It's hard to say. I think for major market stations, well, I guess it's pretty important actually, now that I think about some of my clients. Some go live with their morning shows and they have a huge following. Major market stations tweeting and on Instagram, I think very, very important. And you know, listeners spend a lot of time on social media. I mean, I do. I'm on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter every day. I went off of Twitter for probably like a year and a half and then just picked it back up again recently in the last couple of months for obvious reasons. Mm-hmm. And I started like looking at TikTok too, and there's lots of people on TikTok doing, you know, little bits on from their radio shows. So yeah, I think it's pretty crucial. A lot of TV morning shows are on there too, you know, like Good Morning America, and they talk about what's trending, you know. So it's become part of our culture and part of the lexicon.
Mm-hmm. Well, Leslie, I appreciate you taking time out of your busy, busy day and talking to us not only about your service, but also your experience in radio. And, you know, I didn't know you worked at KFI. And to me, being a radio geek like I am, anybody that could work at a great radio station like KFI, I have a great deal of respect for that. So I appreciate you joining us today on Radio Guy Reflections.
Absolutely, Dave. Take care.
And that's Radio Guy Reflections, a podcast about radio and the people behind the microphone. In future podcasts, we'll look at what makes a successful and sometimes a train wreck of a radio show.
As we say in the radio business, if you put that on the radio, people will listen to it.
We'll talk with people who started in radio and moved on to success in other fields. Radio Guy Reflections. We'll be back soon with another show about radio and the men and women who produce the radio programs you've loved to listen to. Radio Guy Reflections is a production of Dave's Voice Works.